If you listen to the news, or just scroll through any social feed lately, you'd really think the AI revolution is this sold-out blockbuster.
Oh, totally. It's everywhere.
Right, like everyone is supposedly using it to code or build businesses and just completely automate their lives. But while the source material we're digging into today, it's from the Agentic AI Thoughts series.
Yeah, part five, right? The last mile of AI from February 2026.
Exactly. And it opens with some numbers that just completely shatter that whole illusion of everyone using it.
They really do. It's kind of a reality check.
A huge one. According to Noah Epstein, 84% of the world has never had a single conversation with an AI.
Not even one.
Not one. Only 16% have even tried a free chatbot.
Yeah.
And a tiny, I mean really tiny, 0.3% actually pay for an AI service.
Which is wild when you think about the hype.
Right. And the fraction of people using actual coding agents, it's 0.04%. I mean, that is just a nearly invisible dot on the global map.
It really is. And I think it's a brilliant way to kind of ground our perspective for this deep dive because we suffer from this massive distortion in how we view AI adoption right now.
Yeah, the bubble is real.
Oh, absolutely. Like, think back to the mobile internet right around the time the very first iPhone launched. We look back and we think, oh, that was the revolution. But what were you actually carrying in your pocket at that exact moment?
Oh man, a chunky Motorola flip phone. For sure.
Exactly.
I literally remember typing out text messages using the number pad, pressing the number 7 like 4 times just to get the letter S.
Yes. And that right there, that is the perfect equivalent to where we are right now with AI. I mean, most of the world is still texting on a number pad, totally unaware of this massive app store ecosystem that's like just about to arrive.
Right, because the media talks about it constantly. We tend to think we're in the late stages of this massive shift.
Yeah, but we aren't. We are at the absolute starting line.
So, okay, if the starting line is this empty, what actually happens when an ordinary, highly motivated person tries to cross it? Because the source highlights this perfectly with a really great story.
Oh, the Seattle weekend. That story is so revealing.
It really is. So it's about a friend of the author who visits Seattle from Beijing for a weekend. And this guy, he works in finance, he reviews deals, writes investment research
He's a
reports,
super sharp guy.
extremely sharp. He even took like a couple of intro computer science classes almost a decade ago, though he admits that knowledge is pretty much completely gone now.
Right, he's not an engineer.
Not at all. But he came to Seattle with a clear mission. He wanted to learn how to use AI agents for his daily productivity, which is basically where a lot of you listening are probably at. You've
Yeah.
heard the hype, you have the motivation, but what actually happens when a non-engineer tries to jump into the deep end?
Well, what happens is they hit a massive roadblock. Because, like you said, he had the most crucial ingredient, which is motivation. The author had been showing him real-world examples of what these agents could do. So the friend knew the technology was real. He was just desperate to bridge the gap between his daily administrative grind and this new automated world.
But doing that is not so simple.
No, not at all. And the author frames this using a really brilliant concept borrowed from the shipping industry. He calls it the last mile.
Okay, let me see if I can map that logistics analogy out, because it honestly makes a ton of sense when you break it down.
Go for it.
So in shipping, moving goods from a massive warehouse across the ocean to a city port is, incredibly fast and cheap. You put 10,000 laptops on a cargo ship, and they move efficiently in bulk.
Yeah, highly optimized.
Exactly. Even putting them on a semi-truck and driving them down the interstate to a local distribution center, it's all bulk transport on established paved highways.
Right, it's the easy part of the journey.
But that last mile, moving one specific package from that local distribution center, trying to find the right neighborhood, walking up the driveway, avoiding the neighbor's dog, and putting it on a specific front porch, that final stretch consumes a completely disproportionate amount of the total cost and effort.
Yep, it's messy and expensive.
So, how does a physical package delivery actually map onto downloading an AI?
It maps perfectly when you look at the infrastructure. So think about the foundational models, the massive language brains created by OpenAI or Anthropic.
Like the big ones.
Those are the warehouses. They are incredibly powerful, and the capabilities already exist on their massive servers.
Okay.
But the infrastructure connecting those massive brains to an ordinary user's local laptop, so the AI can actually see your specific files and do your specific work. That is the last mile. And right now, that final stretch of road is almost entirely unpaved.
And trying to navigate that unpaved road creates what we can really only describe as a total technical nightmare.
Oh, it's brutal.
Let's look at what actually happened during that weekend in Seattle, because the author wanted to teach his friend how to use Claude Code,
right,
hands-on, to analyze some financial data.
Yeah, and to get there, they basically had to start from absolute zero.
Right, and the list of steps they had to go through is just an alphabet soup of technical hurdles. It's insane.
It really is. What did they have to do first?
Okay, so first, they had to register a GCP account that's Google Cloud Platform.
Right, which most people don't have.
Exactly. Then they had to install the cloud command line interface. They had to configure server settings, deploy an OpenClaw instance, and then configure something called tunnel forwarding.
Tunnel forwarding, yeah. That's where you lose 99% of people.
I have to admit, even I get a little lost there. I mean, why is something like tunnel forwarding even necessary just to use an AI?
Well, it's because these massive AI brains don't actually live inside your computer. They live in a massive data center somewhere else.
Okay, that makes sense.
So to make them work on your actual private financial spreadsheet safely, you have to build a secure, encrypted tunnel between Google servers and your local hard drive. Like, the AI needs a secure bridge to reach your data.
Okay, I understand the function, but man, from a user perspective, that is a nightmare.
Oh, completely.
It's like going to Best Buy to purchase a new television, but instead of handing you a remote control, the cashier hands you a soldering iron, a wiring schematic, and just wishes you good luck.
That is exactly what it feels like. And for the friend from Beijing, his constant reaction to every single step was just, what is this? Why do I need to do this?
Which is totally fair. Things like tunnel forwarding simply do not exist in a non-technical person's cognitive map.
No, and that frustration is entirely justified. But the story takes this really fascinating turn once they finally slogged through that miserable setup process.
Right, because once the bridge was built,
exactly. Once the bridge was built, the Claude Code agent handled almost everything else flawlessly. I mean, it wrote the scripts, it read the technical documentation, it debugged its own errors, and it deployed the services.
Wow.
Yeah. The bottleneck was never the AI's intelligence. The true problem is the massive, grueling chasm between the thought, I want an AI agent, and the reality of, I actually have a working AI agent.
So the author identifies three distinct gaps we have to cross to make AI mainstream. And that technical nightmare we just talked about, that's the first one. He calls the infrastructure gap.
The infrastructure gap, right.
Because everyone is debating whether AI is smart enough to do our jobs, mm-hmm. but very few people are focusing on how ordinary people can actually install the thing in the first place.
Yeah, we're arguing about the engine, but there's no steering wheel.
Exactly. Though the author does mention one success story regarding this entry point problem inside his own company.
Oh yeah, Penpen Mao.
Yes. He built an automated AI engineer for his team called Penpen Mao, and he embedded it directly into their workplace messaging app, Faishu.
Which is such a great example of masking the infrastructure. Because his team members, they don't have to deal with terminal command lines or server configurations.
Right, none of the alphabet soup.
None of it. They just open their chat app and talk to the agent like it's a human coworker. It triages their bug reports. It creates tracking issues. And for simple bugs, it literally submits pull requests directly into the code base.
And for anyone unfamiliar with the terminology, submitting a pull request is basically developer speak for writing a proposed fix and putting it on the boss's desk for approval.
Yep, perfectly said.
It does all the heavy lifting and basically just asks for a signature.
Mm.
So I have to challenge the premise here for a second, though.
Okay, lay it on me.
If his team can just chat with the agent in a normal messaging app and the AI does all the complex coding in the background, hasn't the infrastructure gap been completely solved? Like, the team has a totally seamless experience.
Well, they do have a seamless experience, but you really have to ask how that road got paved in the first place. Right. The only reason his team can just open a chat app and get to work is because the author, who's a highly skilled engineer who works with AI every single day, spent hours building that custom bridge for them.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Ordinary users out in the world, they don't have the technical inclination to set that up, nor do they have a personal engineer assigned to them to build those bridges.
So the last mile was paved, but only because a specialist came in and poured the concrete manually.
Precisely.
And that brings up an incredible behind-the-scenes detail from the source material about Anthropic, the actual company that created Claude Code.
Oh, this part is wild.
Because you would think the people working inside the company building the AI would have this all figured out.
You would definitely assume so. But the reality inside their walls proves how steep this barrier truly is. Even at Anthropic, the non-engineers, like the designers, the data scientists, the finance team, they were jumping through massive technical hoops just to use their own company's product.
They were out there trying to figure out how to install Node.js on their laptops.
Mm.
And Node.js, for context, is essentially a runtime environment. It's a way for code to actually execute on your computer outside of a web browser. It is absolutely not something a finance person should ever have to think about.
Never.
Yet people were fighting through these raw, text-based terminal interfaces just to access the AI. And the demand from regular users out in the wild was even crazier.
Oh, the use cases people were trying to force through that terminal.
Yeah, people were using these complicated terminal screens to monitor their tomato plants, to recover corrupted wedding photos from old hard drives, and to do personal financial analysis. My favorite detail from the source, by far, someone was using a terminal command line interface to pay a parking ticket.
I mean, it just highlights a ridiculous contradiction in how we interact with technology right now.
Right.
A terminal screen with glowing green text should not be the entry point for paying a city parking ticket. It's the ultimate mismatch of tool and task. The friction is so high that only the most desperately motivated people will ever push through it.
Well, Anthropic eventually realized this was completely absurd, so they built a solution. They called it Cowork.
Yeah, Cowork.
And the story of how they built Cowork is like the very definition of AI building AI. Because Cowork is basically the Claude code agent wrapped in an accessible, easy-to-use desktop interface.
Yeah, you just double-click an icon and it opens.
Exactly. It runs inside a secure virtual machine, which is basically a digital sandbox.
Uh-huh.
A contained area where the AI can experiment and write code without any risk of accidentally deleting your family photos or, you know, corrupting your hard drive.
But the speed of development is really the most impressive part here. That entire desktop application was built by just 4 engineers in 10 days.
10 days.
10 days. And the underlying code was written almost entirely by Claude Code itself.
That is just wild.
And it's so much more accessible that even Anthropic's own sales team prefers using Cowork over the raw terminal, just because it's safer and infinitely easier to use.
Okay, so if Cowork exists, and anyone can just download a desktop app that runs safely in a sandbox, then the infrastructure gap is closed, right?
Basically.
The engineering barrier is gone. We paved the last mile, so everyone should be using it tomorrow.
Well, it solves the engineering problem, yes.
Right.
But it instantly slams us right into the second major hurdle.
Of course, there's another hurdle.
Always.
Yep.
And the author calls this one the imagination gap, because making the tool easy to double-click does not matter at all if the user has no idea what the tool is actually capable of doing.
Okay, I really want to dig into that. Let's go back to the friend from Beijing during that Seattle weekend. Before they sat down together, he had used ChatGPT and various free tools, right?
Right.
But his mental model of AI was completely broken.
Right.
Like most of the world, he thought AI was just a slightly smarter search engine. You ask it a question, and it prints out a paragraph of text.
Exactly. He knew it should be impressive, right?
Yeah.
Because the author kept talking about it. But knowing something in theory and while actually experiencing it in practice are entirely different things.
Oh, absolutely.
So during that weekend, they didn't just ask the AI trivia questions. They pointed Claude Code at the friend's actual raw financial data.
Which is a huge leap.
Huge. And the AI autonomously built these financial models, generated analytical reports, and even iterated on those models based on the friend's verbal feedback.
Wow.
It wasn't talking about finance. It was actively doing financial analysis.
And it extended way beyond finance, too. They spent an afternoon building a voice-controlled Flappy Bird game from scratch.
I love that part.
Two grown men sitting in a living room giving verbal commands to a laptop, trying to keep a pixelated bird from hitting green pipes. They went from zero code to a fully playable voice-activated video game in 1 hour.
In 1 hour.
And then the AI built him a custom data tool tailored entirely to his specific business workflow in Beijing. Not generic software you buy off a shelf, but an application that existed solely for him.
And that sequence of events, that's what triggers the aha moment. Because when they finished the weekend, the friend looked at the custom tools on his screen and just said, an hour ago, none of this existed.
It perfectly proves this incredible concept from the source called disposable software.
Yes.
Historically, you know, software took months to build and cost millions of dollars, so it had to serve thousands of people to be profitable.
Right, you couldn't build it for one guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But now, it's technically feasible to build software for a single person's temporary needs. You build an app to sort your messy tax receipts on a Tuesday, and you delete the app on Wednesday. It's disposable. But nobody knows they can ask for it.
That's the problem.
It's like wandering into a 5-star Michelin restaurant, sitting down at a table with crystal glasses and silver cutlery, and ordering a glass of tap water because you think you're standing in a waiting room. You just don't know the tasting menu exists.
Okay, I love that. That analogy captures the essence of the imagination gap perfectly. You cannot order the tasting menu if you think you're at a water fountain. And this ties into a concept from Boris Cherny. He's the creator of Claude Code, which he calls latent demand.
Latent demand.
Yeah. The principle is that humans naturally resist doing entirely new things. You cannot easily force behavior change.
We're stubborn.
Very. However, if people are already trying to accomplish a specific task and you offer a way to make that exact task drastically easier, they will adopt your solution instantly.
The demand is already there. It's just asleep.
Yes. And to build on that, billions of people are doing complex information work every single day. The desire to make that work easier is universal, but they do not demand AI agents because they literally don't know the supply exists.
Right.
The friend from Beijing didn't lack the desire to automate his financial models. What he lacked was the exposure to the tool. Once he saw the AI working on his own spreadsheets, his latent demand exploded into active, hungry demand.
So it's not a motivation problem at all. It's an exposure problem. Once you finally see the menu, you want to order everything in the kitchen, which leads us to the practical application. What is actually on the menu? Like, if we have this latent demand waiting to be woken up, what does it look like in a normal person's daily life?
Well, the source outlines several incredible real-world use cases that prove this point, and the best part is none of them require a computer science degree.
Perfect.
The first is automating the administrative sludge of daily life. You know, the repetitive tasks nobody wants to do.
Oh, I hate those. Things like logging into a portal to pay a parking ticket or navigating a really confusing website to cancel a subscription you've been putting off.
Yes.
Or formatting your team's weekly reports into a clean PDF.
Sure.
Just the digital chores.
Exactly, those chores. Now, the second item on the menu is deep data analysis and research, and we really need to clarify the shift here. It's not asking the AI a single question to pull a specific data point. It's handing the agent access to your entire database and saying, explore this information, find interesting patterns regarding our customer retention, and write it up as a strategic report.
Yeah.
The agent decides autonomously what queries to run to discover the answers.
So you're giving it a broad goal instead of a specific step-by-step command.
Right. And then, of course, there's the disposable software. We just talked about custom tools for your specific Tuesday afternoon problem.
Love that.
And finally, personalized learning. This one is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Instead of using a traditional search engine to ask, you know, what is quantum physics and getting a dense Wikipedia page.
Which I would never understand.
Right. Instead, you tell the agent, I want to understand quantum physics. My background is in graphic design and I have 10 minutes. Explain it using visual metaphors I would understand and walk me through it step by step.
That's so cool.
It becomes a private tutor with infinite patience, dynamically adjusting to your specific background.
The demand for that level of personalization is just everywhere. So let's review where we stand. The foundational models are incredibly smart. The Cowork desktop app removes the technical infrastructure gap. The Michelin star menu removes the imagination gap.
Yeah.
The technology works, and we know what to ask for.
Yeah.
So what's left? What is the final barrier keeping that 0.04% adoption rate so low?
Well, the final barrier is what the author calls the communication gap. The ultimate bottleneck is your personal ability to give good instructions.
Interesting.
Yeah, if the tool is accessible and you know what it can do, the only thing holding you back is how precisely you can define the task.
So our own human communication skills actually become the limiting factor.
It goes even further than that. The text provides a brilliant rule of thumb to test whether you are communicating effectively. They call it the human test.
The human test. How does that work?
Imagine you hired a competent human software engineer. You handed them your written instructions and you went to sleep. Could that human get the job done overnight without asking you any clarifying questions?
Huh? If a human could succeed with those instructions, the AI agent probably will too. But if a human would be confused or missing context or just bound to fail, the AI will fail just as spectacularly.
Okay, let's apply the human test to a real example from the source. If I open an AI agent and I just type, build me something like WeChat. That is a terrible prompt, right?
It is a complete disaster.
Okay.
It's far too vague for any entity, human, or machine. Like, what does like WeChat even mean?
Right.
Does it mean you want the green visual interface? Do you want the messaging features? Do you need the integrated payment system? A human engineer would just stare at you, completely paralyzed by the lack of constraints.
But if I change my instruction and say, here's a link to my company current website in Chinese. Keep the visual design and layout completely identical, translate all the text content to English, and build me a fully functional mirror site on a new domain.
See, that passes the test perfectly. It provides clear context, specific constraints, and obvious acceptance criteria. You know exactly what success looks like.
Yeah, there's no guessing.
Exactly. Whether you're dealing with a human employee or an artificial intelligence, expecting perfect mind-reading delivery from a vague one-sentence instruction is just entirely unrealistic.
The great realization here is that the secret to utilizing AI is not actually learning how to code, it's learning how to manage.
Yes.
The biggest bottleneck isn't the processing power of the computer, it's whether we can assign tasks like a competent manager.
Which brings us to the profound shift underlying all of this. The source concludes that using AI effectively requires us to transition into a managerial role. We basically have to become articulate, precise delegators.
And that transition is not just a change in software, it's a massive change in professional identity.
Definitely.
Let's recap the three gaps we've covered today. We started with the infrastructure gap. The absolute nightmare of terminal command lines that keep the adoption rate at a microscopic 0.04%.
Mm.
And we saw how tools like Anthropic's Cowork app are paving that final mile. Second, we uncovered the imagination gap, where we realized we can summon disposable software out of thin air, provided we stop treating the AI like a tap water search engine and realize the full tasting menu is available.
Exactly.
And finally, we hit the communication gap, where the latent demand is activated, but only if we learn to communicate with extreme precision.
And, you know, navigating that final communication gap leaves us with a really critical question to ponder.
What's that?
If the primary, most highly valued skill of the future economy is no longer executing tasks yourself, but rather delegating them with extreme precision to a machine, what happens to us?
Wow. It fundamentally challenges how we view ourselves. I mean, millions of us have built our entire careers, our entire sense of self-worth on being the doer. We take pride in being the person who grinds out the spreadsheet, who writes the code, who physically carries the package up the driveway.
Exactly. We stake our professional identities on execution. But we are hurtling toward a near future where everyone, regardless of their specific industry or background, must suddenly pivot to become a middle manager to a machine.
Right.
You have to give up the execution and focus entirely on strategy and delegation.
It's a massive psychological shift. And really, are any of us actually trained for that job?
Probably not.
We spend decades in school learning how to execute specific tasks, but very few of us are formally taught how to be excellent, clear-thinking managers. We have to learn how to step back, define the constraints of a problem, and just hand it off.
The transition from doer to delegator will likely be the defining career challenge of the next decade. The technology is rapidly removing the friction of creation, but it is placing the burden of clarity squarely on our shoulders.
We have to learn how to run the logistics network instead of just driving the delivery truck.
So the next time you hear someone talking about the massive AI blockbuster revolution, and you wonder why your own daily workflow still feels exactly the same, remember that we are just at the flip phone stage of this journey.
We really are.
The infrastructure is being paved. The tasting menu is being printed. The technology is sitting there waiting in the sandbox. The only question left is, are you ready to be the manager it needs? Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.